fan. On demand. Log on to Sportsnet590.ca. Sign up to automatically receive the latest reports, features, and Fan 590 show highlights. Nobody does it better. This is Hockey Central on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Stanley Cup Playoffs. It's Hockey Central presented by Lexus on the Park and Hockey Central from the Montreal and Tampa Bay series. We broadcast from the Bell Center. Darren Millard along with Nick Kyprios, Doug McLean, Scott Morrison will join us in a little bit. But with our set here, we have Louis Jean from TVS Sports, formerly of Sportsnet, the best dressed man on the panel today.
I thought it was suit attire. I didn't know. Nobody told me.
You have come along.
Hey, don't sell yourself short. We did breakfast television today in Montreal. Yeah. A terrific show, by the way. Mm-hmm. He didn't wear socks for that one. Do you have socks today?
Doug didn't
for
wear
this?
Socks.
Doug did not wear socks. So you wore socks for Hockey Central at noon, but you didn't wear socks for breakfast television
a
Montreal.
Little earlier. The 7 o'clock is tough to pull the socks on.
Plenty to get to today, as it's been a bizarre playoff so far in the opening week with teams failing to be able to hold on to leads, and we'll get into the other seven series. But right now, Montreal has a stranglehold on the Tampa Bay Lightning with a 3-0 series lead, and Game 3 by far the best one of this set with controversy and some great plays. Start with the no-goal call, and just get an opinion going down the road, starting with Louis, did you think it was the right call to disallow the goal by Callahan?
Yeah, I think it's the right call when you look at black on white what the rule says, but I think common sense as well probably should prevail to a certain degree. There's definitely some gray air for me when I look at the call and the rule, and I look at what happened on the ice. And so I definitely understand John Cooper being ticked off. I can see how he'd be really hot after that goal being disallowed, because I think it's a huge momentum swing for sure. In the Bell Center, we saw the crowd, we saw how nuts it was, and all of a sudden the heat is on Montreal. So did they get the ruling right? I think they did, but also I think, as weirdly as this is going to sound, I think you could kind of flip it around and say that, you know what, if that goal is good, I'm not sure Montreal is going to make that big of a case out of it. They're going to say, okay, well, maybe Price got bumped a little bit, maybe there was a guy in the crease, but bottom line is that he probably had enough time to get back in his crease and set for that shot.
Yeah, so when you look at the rule and you say, okay, just a minute, Price comes across, and Killorn, doesn't matter if Price initiates contact or not. If Killorn's in his paint and in his crease, and Killorn does not allow him to get across, that's goalie interference.
Correct.
Okay, but here's the problem I had with it. Subban held Killorn in the net. He interfered with him and kept him in the net. When PK released him, Killorn's trying to get out, and the collision. If PK would not have held Killorn in the net, there wouldn't have been goalie interference,
because
Killorn would have been out. Exactly. That is the common sense part. In fairness to the official, we can see it on three replays. He has to make the reaction call. Tough call.
It's a stupid rule. It is. And it's based on the fact what you just said. It's too gray. It is too gray, and it's too judgmental. Now, the rule is supposed to be in there so the goaltender doesn't have anyone impede his ability to go stop a puck. That's not the case here, okay? Killorn gets tripped into the net. All Killorn wants to do is get out. Yeah. Get out, okay? Now, where was Carey Price's, where was he fixated? Was it on the puck? No. He goes out of his way to run interference on Killorn to not get out of the net.
I don't think he's
thinking
that.
Oh, take a look. Take a look.
You think he's going
take
to?
Take a look.
Hold on.
He knows. Let me finish.
He did not. That's ridiculous.
Okay? Let me finish.
Opinion.
Okay? He goes to his left, and after PK runs the interference that you're talking about, he's going to go give him an extra shot. You know why he gives him an extra shot? Because he knows the rule. He knows that if he makes contact, he'll get the call.
No way.
You know what? I'll say this. I don't think he is. If you go back in the regular season against Colorado, there's a similar goal that was disallowed. I think it's a Benoit goal on Carey Price, and I guarantee you he knows the rule.
He knows how to
play it in his favor.
Yes, he is.
Hold on.
He knows.
Okay. Now let me finish. He's not putting himself in a position in the Stanley Cup playoffs to take himself out of a play.
He's not taking himself out of a play.
Hold on, hold on.
He's making contact with him, which will get him the whistle.
Turn about fair play here, right? Right? He's not putting himself in a position where it's in the referee's hands instead of being an athlete and trying to stop the puck.
But the thing is that if you engage with the player, if there's a contact, then for sure it's going to be waved off, and he knows that.
Yes, exactly.
That's why I think...
That's my point.
I think he's done it before this year, so
totally.
I think...
Totally. He's a veteran.
He's done it before. He's done it this year. I think he's very cognizant.
In the crease.
Yeah, no, I understand that. But what I mean is that
he has nowhere to
go. I think that they're scrambling at that point. The defense is scrambling so badly that, listen, I think that ultimately he still wants to stop the puck. But Carey Price is running around. The D-Core is running around. Everybody's running around.
Chaos.
And he hits him. He has no reason to hit Killorn the last time.
No reason at all.
He's out, you know, on the left side of the goal. So.
See, I'm sorry. Like, we give the referee the benefit of the doubt. That's a spontaneous call, and it's a quick call with Subban, the interference, keeping Killorn. I'm sorry, Price has one thing in mind, okay? And whether he collides, whether he does, Price has one thing in mind, in my opinion, and that's getting to the other side of the net. He's getting to the other side of the net. Is it in his head, I'm going to hit him? I'm not buying that, guys. His number one priority is, I'm getting to that side of the net.
He tried to run interference.
Just a minute. I'm going to get to that side no matter how I get there. I've got to get to that side.
He didn't want to let him out of the net, Mac.
Yeah.
Well, he went out of his way to keep him in the net.
Well, Subban kept him in so that the timing was almost perfect.
And then he passed the torch on,
so,
and then it was
the only way it's a non-goal is if the referee sees Subban interfering with keeping him in the net, and he blows it down and calls Subban for interference.
It's a conspiracy theory that you guys have cooked up.
No, listen, that way. What I'm saying is that the bottom line is that there still is a lot of gray area in how you're going to use this rule, and I think that ultimately if Francis Charron says, you know what, no goal because we didn't allow the guy to come out. Now, I don't know if Charron actually saw that Subban was keeping Killorn.
No, he didn't see it. I don't think he would have.
He probably didn't. I mean, there's so much going on, and there's so many players in front of the net. But the bottom line is that I think if that goal counts, I'm not sure Montreal's going to make that big of a case out.
So, and you know what? We're talking Price here and smarts. Smarts. I mean, he's a smart
veteran
goaltender.
Savvy.
But the one that bothered me almost as much is when he did the skate blade. I mean, if I'm Cooper on that one, I snap.
There's three things that happen within about 8 minutes. One, the goal is waved off. Steven Stamkos, before that, is whistled offside on a breakaway, where you take it down on the PVR, and it's hard to say whether he was or he wasn't. It was that close, and linesman makes the call that it's offside, and you've got one of the greatest goal scorers going in. And then you have the delay on an icing play in which Carey Price is allowed to go to the bench and get a skate fixed.
And Darren, the point on this...
And all went against the Lightning.
But yeah, and the point on this one is...
Should have been a delay.
I watched this shift, okay? And if you recall, P.K. Subban was on the ice for at least a minute 45. And if you recall, when it was coming back for the faceoff, Subban is hunched over trying to get his breath, trying to survive for the faceoff. Critical part of the hockey game, and the referees, I'm sorry, I'm not nailing the referees, but for them to allow him to go to the bench, I'm sorry, that was a bad situation.
That comes back to what Kipper just said, veteran move, though. I mean, that is definitely that's
a veteran
move.
Let's be honest with
him. Price can do what he wants. The referee should never allow that to happen.
Referees, as we know, there's two sets of rules, one for the veterans out there and one for a young kid, and Price falls into that superstar veteran category.
So look at this situation. You're a referee. And Price skates over to you with Subban humped over next to him.
And he
puts his skate and says, oh, I lost my edge. And the referee says, oh, great. Go fix it. Are you kidding me?
I didn't see. But did the referee check the blade?
Well, he showed him how it was sliding on the ice.
I know, but
the ref kind of looked over and like, what am I supposed to do?
When did the referee become
get back in the net?
Expert.
You know what he should have done? Get back in that and drop the puck. That's what he should have said.
Yeah.
You know?
I agree.
And they didn't have a timeout. They had already used their timeout.
And you're right. I mean, those are three calls. I mean, maybe that turns the series around, or at least gives Tampa Bay a little momentum. Now it seems as though, I mean, from 11 seconds in, where Montreal scores with the Bork, you know, the lob, the, you know,
the J.C. Trombley lob.
Yeah, the J.C. Trombley lob. The J.C. Trombley special. So I do, actually. I've met him several times.
We heard on breakfast television in Montreal this morning.
Well, I don't know about his butt, but I know he knew how to get rid of it. Yeah.
And to cap off that second period, Stamkos leaves.
Yeah.
It gets bonked in the head, and Montreal scores.
Yeah, and I was watching some of the guys warm up. There's an optional skate here at the Bell Center this morning, and I'm not sure if Stamkos is on the ice or not, but when the guys were all warming up, he was not there, so I'm not quite sure if he's going to skate today or what his status is going to be.
Hockey Central from the Bell Center, Darren Millard, Nick Kiprios, Doug McLean, and from TVS Sports, Louis Jean. Hockey Central presented by Lex in the Park.
The first period of the game, I thought it should have been, I mean, they scored the first goal. I thought it could have been 5-0 after the first period, the way Montreal dominated the game and really took it. But as the game wore on, Tampa felt much more comfortable, and Tampa come back and gave themselves a good couple of periods of hockey and battled their tails off despite a lot of adversity. Where does that take them? I mean, Montreal, to me, looked like they're just too good for them right now.
Tampa played a great game. I thought Tampa deserved to win that game last night.
Other than they should have been down 5-0 in the first.
You can't get dominated like that in the first period.
You know that's coming here.
Yeah.
You know the first period is going to be the toughest period of the series. And it was.
But the thing for me is that if you go back to Wednesday before puck drop in game one, and I would tell you, Montreal leads 3-0. Who's the starting goaltender in game four? You'd probably say it's going to be Gudlevskis, or you force Ben Bishop back. And I'm not sure you can pin it on Lindback.
Yeah. No.
I mean, he was, to your point, I mean, it could have been 4-5-0 after one. He's actually been
good.
Here's
the problem, though. Here's the problem, guys. It's bad goals every game. Yeah. And I don't care if he's got 20 shots or 40. Don't talk to me the ones that he stopped. Talk to me about the ones that have gone in. Mm-hmm. And Plekanec, bad angle, almost on his knees before the shot is in the net.
Double screened by his own team, though.
Bad angle. I am sorry, but those goals can't go in. And unfortunately, as much as you want to talk about Tampa staying in the game with his goaltending, it's the bad goals that have been the difference.
I'm disappointed in how they've adapted to the Montreal game. I've watched two games in Tampa where defensively Montreal totally took their team speed away with excellent 1-2-2 defensive play in the neutral zone. Totally took their speed away. Then you go last night, and offensively Montreal took it to them by stretching the neutral zone out, and I don't see a lot of adapting. The other thing that really bothers me with Tampa is Stamkos plays 4 minutes and 30 seconds in the first period. I know there was 4 minutes of penalties. I get that. Double shift them then to finish the period. Get him up to the 6-7 minutes. And for him not to give him a shift with Phil... I've been harping on this for two games. He's playing him with Johnson and Palat or Killorn to not mix it up.
Palat gave them...
Give him Phil Pula and Callahan even once in a while to try to get something going. Give him a couple of veterans. Doesn't make sense to me.
Palat gave them a different look. Obviously, last night. But the problem with Stamkos is no one else is going.
Exactly. Okay?
Nobody else is going
here. But wouldn't
here.
You give them a chance with Callahan and Phil Pula? They're veteran guys that are good players. Wouldn't you give them a few shifts?
I would shake it up.
Seriously.
I would shake it up. But the problem here is their go-to guys have all but disappeared other than Stamkos.
And look. And all roads go through Stamkos.
Right.
Obviously.
And everybody's saying their kids are inexperienced. Where are their veterans here? Come on, boys. Like, Brown and Johnson have given them everything they've got. Palat. But where are their veterans?
Well, Philpola's got over 100 Stanley Cup
playoff games with Detroit. Where's Brewer?
But I ask you this. When was the last time we talked about Detroit being in the playoffs and saying, that Philpola's got to show up or else they're not going anywhere?
No, I agree.
Okay, first time in his life.
5 million.
He's got the go-to label on his back, and he's not adjusting too well so far.
Just an update on Ben Bishop, who was out before the optional skate for the Tampa Bay Lightning with Steve Thomas and the goalie coach and the athletic therapist, and was taking shots. Most shots we've seen him take at any point during this series, but he was afraid to catch
the
puck.
Well, no, he didn't shoot to his glove.
Oh, they did a few times.
No, they did not. They went low. I watched it. Thomas shot about 100 pucks. It was either low stick, low glove, but he caught one, and it was by accident in the first, I'd say, 20 minutes
half an hour.
And John Cooper was, well, I was down by the ice, and John Cooper was there watching as well. He opened the door at one point, brought the goalie coach over, and Steve Thomas, he said, listen, the shots from the wristers from the blue line, move in and challenge him. He said, you got to challenge him a little bit more. So clearly, down 0-3, yeah. I don't know what's going to happen for game four. I presume he's still not going to be ready, but... they want him to try. They want to just challenge him and see if they can try and get him game ready.
He's progressing. I mean, first time in Tampa, no shots. Second time throwing pucks at him. Today shooting pucks. And as you said and reported, moving in. They're praying. Go down to the cathedral this afternoon and say a prayer and get him on the ice.
We will get to the other series in just a moment, but while we have Louis Jean here from TVS Sports, want to concentrate on Montreal's dominance of the Tampa Bay Lightning, a 3-0 series lead, although two of them have been one-goal decisions and one went to overtime. P.K. Subban, throughout this series, has been in control, not as flashy as we've seen in the past, although he did pull out the spinorama last night and make the great play, but... I think we're seeing a turning point in P.K. Subban's career.
You have to see one, only because he's such an important player, but it comes down to one thing with Michel Therrien, is trust. They have stats that they keep, and the guy that turned the puck over the most of the season, and I don't know what it's like with Carlson in Ottawa. I don't know what it's like
higher,
with Doughty.
Higher.
What I'm saying is that...
Maybe not.
And Spezza, higher.
Yeah. P.K. Subban, and I'm talking about offensive defensemen who log a ton of minutes, like the Doughtys in L.A. and guys like that. P.K. Subban had twice as more giveaways and turnovers than Andrei Markov, who was number two on the team. That is an issue for Michel Therrien. It's an issue for Marc Bergevin. They love the guy. They like the enthusiasm. They know he can be a game breaker. But they say, listen, from them. They're saying, listen, you need to make smarter decisions. Pick your spots. He's done this.
He really has.
He's done it in this series.
He really
Absolutely.
Has. I saw Terrific. Two or three times when he gained the red line and he'd actually dump it in. And to me, we know him pretty well. He wants to challenge himself. He's got creative juices, which we saw on the Gallagher goal, but it's just about making the right decisions. And I think he's been great so far in these three games.
Yeah, and you know where else he's been terrific and different for me, and I agree with what you're saying both. He's picking his spots, but on the power play. Look, we saw PK for a couple of years, and to the point, shot. If you watch the last two games, their power play has been struggling. All of a sudden, this power play looks like it's ready to explode. They have got as good a puck movement as I've seen on a power play in the playoffs. They're dishing it around. They look like Chicago in the power play when Chicago's looking good. But he's making selective plays there. Typically, he'd be teeing them up and blasting them. He's moving to Pacioretty. He's moving to Markov. He's looking all over the ice. I think this power play, and that's what could be a key.
And Vanek,
they look like they're ready to explode.
Vanek has given them a different look.
Totally.
And you know, some nights, and I know we just talked about this earlier, that you don't notice him probably as much as you think you should. But a lot has to do with how much demand there is from the opponents to cover him,
totally.
To show him respect. And that leaves a lot of other teammates open.
Pacioretty has become a different player to me since Vanek arrived because there's lots of attention paid to Vanek. And also, Vanek can make plays. Vanek can make plays. And Pacioretty, like Pacioretty to me looks like a budding superstar the way he's taken off in the games I've watched. And I haven't seen him much this year.
And Pacioretty, it's interesting because the link with Therrien and Subban and wanting to make Subban a more responsible player. At the beginning of the year, Therrien and Pacioretty did not necessarily see eye to eye. They did not necessarily get along. I'm not sure that there was a complete respect from either one. But I can tell you something happened during the season where at one point they went five games they couldn't win. And Therrien brought Pacioretty and Desharnais in as a line. Vanek wasn't here yet. And he said, listen, guys, you know, you guys, everything goes through you offensively. We need you, and we need a win tonight, and it starts with you. And they had a tremendous game. And I remember talking to Pacioretty after the game, and he said, you know what? He said he kept us together despite the fact that for five games we didn't do anything. Not a sniff, not a goal, not a point. We couldn't do anything. He said we really respect how he treated us during that sequence, and he brought us in. He needed us, and we gave it back to him. And it was so I think that's what we're starting to see as well with P.K. Subban and Michel Therrien. But what I like about Subban from last night is he took that penalty. He felt really bad about it, and he wanted to make amends for it. And then he had the pass, obviously, in the opening goal, but then also the play on the Gallagher goal.
But he didn't force it when he was trying to make something happen.
That's the difference in his game. And I'll tell you who else. Like, I'm telling you, and I don't watch the Habs anywhere near as much as I should probably, but I'm watching Plekanec, Prust, and Gallagher, and every shift they made something happen. Gallagher got the point, got the goals, but I'll tell you what, Plekanec is an underrated centerman in the NHL, a two-way player. Prust is making plays, and he's feisty. And Gallagher, to me, is one of the reasons of the resurgence of the Montreal Canadiens. The way this, I mean, they've always talked about they need bigger guys. How big does this guy play? And how
many
important
times
he is
his face in the boards yesterday?
Seriously.
You squeeze everything you can out of this kid.
He's become an unbelievable player.
Montreal's in a position to sweep the Tampa Bay Lightning. And people will be getting all excited thinking this is the start of something because of the series dominance on that level. But have they been that good, or does Tampa Bay have a certain role in this?
I think there's a combination of both here, and you know, we can go back to maybe the lack of confidence going into this series without Bishop, and you know, we see throughout the league what good goaltending can do for you. Maybe Bishop's been masking a little bit here. I'm surprised in terms of how poor or disappointed I am in Tampa's blue line as a core. Hedman, of course, had a great regular season, but he's not ready just yet to grab the torch and lead in the playoffs here. Gudas, tough guy, but running around, trying to knock everybody through the glass and losing position. They've had some major issues, and that's why it won't go back to the goaltending being the major disappointment for me out of Tampa Bay in this series. I think they've faltered in terms of their team defense.
Yeah, like you look at the top four defensemen on Montreal, they've played exceptionally well for me. They've done an outstanding job getting the puck going. Like last night for the first period and 5 minutes, Tampa Bay would throw it in. They could finally get through the neutral zone last night. They'd dump it in, and it was one and out. One and out. I mean, they couldn't sustain any forecheck because Montreal were getting the puck going. Then they stretched the neutral zone, and they really had them mixed up. But when Montreal let down a touch, they've got a superstar in goal. I mean, this guy, I know he struggled to start game one, but this guy has made four or five key saves in every game, starting with the overtime in game one where we saw four unbelievable saves. Last night, again, he makes some big saves. And the going to the bench with a skate, whether we like it or not, was an unbelievably smart play by the guy.
Yeah, I completely agree. I remember last year with the Montreal Canadiens against the Ottawa Senators. Sure, they ran into some injury problems, but I think it goes beyond that. I think it's just you're not ready. When you start the playoffs and you've got eight players that have never experienced what the NHL playoffs are like, I think that's going to end up hurting you. And it may be the old cliche of you need to figure out what it takes to win before you can. But you know, you're going to lose before you learn what it takes to win. And I think that's probably what the Tampa Bay Lightning is experiencing right now.
Louis Jean from TBS Sports, thanks for stepping in here.
My pleasure. It's always good to be on.
Can I get some of your old suits?
Deborah Berman. Deborah Berman.
Any
always,
old clothes?
She always told me where to go, and I'm not at Sportsnet anymore, I still go.
Have you got a Deborah looking after you here?
I don't have a Deborah, but I still have her information.
She's our stylist, Deborah Berman. When we continue, an update on the Philadelphia Flyers goaltending front, and we'll ask Scott Morrison, Doug McLean, and Nick Kiprios for an explanation on what happened between the LA Kings and the San Jose Sharks. It's Hockey Central, live from the Stanley Cup playoffs in Montreal, presented by Lexus on the Park.
Cooler than Math Club and almost as cool as Chess Club. The Fan Club. Log on to Sportsnet590.ca. Now, more Hockey Central on Sportsnet 590. The Fan.
Back at the Bell Center here in Montreal, where the Canadiens lead the Tampa Bay Lightning 3-0. It's Hockey Central live from the Stanley Cup playoffs. Scott Morrison joins the panel along with Doug McLean and Nick Kiprios. Four games coming your way tonight, including Anaheim at Dallas with a 2-0 series lead. And then you have St. Louis and Chicago, Colorado, Minnesota. They're both 2-0 advantages. And Pittsburgh and Columbus are tied up at 1. What happened between L.A. and San Jose last night, in which the Kings had a 2-0 lead, the worst lead in the Stanley Cup playoffs in the year 2014, and then allow 7 unanswered goals by the Sharks.
Yeah, it was amazing. I mean, San Jose just started flying in that game. Joel Thornton afterwards said, I don't know what happened. He said it was a weird night, an oddity. To score on consecutive games against Jonathan Quick, the volume of goals, 13 goals in those two games, no one would ever have predicted that happening. I think they only scored 10 goals in 7 games against him last year in the first round. So, but it was one of those games in which the fourth line really got San Jose energized. Brown got a goal. Torres got a goal to get them back in it. And then the big boys. And it was 7 different scores on the night. Thornton, DeMarlo, the Couture, to Pavelski. All the big guys started jumping.
And good goals.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, you say how many bad goals. When you say you lose 7-2 or 13 goals in 2 games, you'd think there was a ton of bad goals. Has there been a bad goal?
No.
No, that's the, you know.
It almost, to me, seems like San Jose's now playing with a chip on their shoulder, that even though that they have the home ice advantage, nobody, including, I think, us, give them any chance to beat L.A.
I didn't.
You have them winning the cup. Nobody.
No.
And they look now like a team that's on a mission.
The only thing I will caution you on is a year ago, L.A. lost the first 2 games on the road against the St. Louis Blues and came back and won 4 straight.
Yeah, I don't think this one's over. You know, and it's like the Chicago, you know, when you're going home, it wouldn't surprise you that Chicago, St. Louis, and L.A., San Jose could be 2-2. But I think you're right, Nick. San Jose were beaten up the last month and people ripping them. St. Louis, the very same, ripped on. Now they're on a mission that, hey, we gotta do something here. A lot of people are going to be in trouble here if we don't play well.
Just going back to the 2-0 blown series leads, and I like John Cooper. You know, I think he's a breath of fresh air, but I did not like him bringing up the fact that he didn't think Montreal's ever blown a 2-0 series lead on the road. To me, that obviously states the obvious, and that's our jobs in the media. But when you're in that Montreal dressing room,
he's training,
and you hear that coming from the head coach of the team that you're playing against, that just adds a little fuel to the fire to make sure that that comeback doesn't happen. And, you know, I think San Jose's in pretty good shape right now.
I guarantee you Daryl Sutter didn't say it last night.
No, the thing about L.A. and Chicago, to your point, Mac, is it's the old cliche. You're never really in trouble until you lose at home. And so they're going back home with a chance to hold serve and get things back to even.
Now, unlike L.A., the Chicago Blackhawks go home down 2-0, but will have to play without one of their top defensemen in Brent Seabrook, who's suspended for 3 games.
Big loss. I mean, Seabrook, Keith, how valuable they've been to the Chicago Blackhawks the last 5-7 years. I mean, they're the shutdown pair. They're together all the time. They're power play. They're point producers. Big-time loss. Now, Backes, we don't know if Backes is going to play. If Backes is out...
Shouldn't play.
If Backes is out, it may be a wash here. But I'm telling you, Seabrook is a monumental loss.
And we talked about this, Scott. You alluded to Stamkos coming back. And, you know, it's twofold here, boys, because we're in a new era here. And while we speak of Stamkos coming back, great character, Backes should not play. You do not today in 2014 get to, you know, wobble off the ice like that and play 2 days later, guys. It just shouldn't happen.
And Stamkos wobbled off and came back after an intermission.
Listen, I know. And listen, I'm old school. I'm with you. I want that guy. I love him. That guy can play for my team any day. But we're still now in a situation where should he have come back? Like, we saw him. He didn't look very good leaving, going to the dressing room. Backes, same thing. Can these guys come back 48 hours and play? And are we doing more harm than good?
Especially when they're your most important players. Like, Backes is one of the most important players in St. Louis. Stamkos, Palat sat out, 4 days with his? And people were saying upper body. It was a concussion, apparently.
Chicago didn't get a thing out of 2 really good hockey games.
I was just going to say, Brendan Gallagher got rocked here last night, too, and ended up being one of the best players. He just took some time on the bench. So everything's degrees of injury, but I think I'd be shocked to see Backes play tonight. And I guess there's a little bit of a sidebar story happening in that series, is that one of the microphones near the ice while he was staggering along the boards and they had the scrum apparently caught Duncan Keith saying to him, "Wakey, wakey," which the Blues didn't appreciate that very much, so making fun of the situation. But you talk about the psyches of the two teams. As you got LA that gives up a ton of goals, Seven unanswered last night, get hammered. How do they feel about themselves and their defensive game? And then Chicago easily could have been up 2-0, blows two leads before losing them both times in overtime. So you wonder where their mindset is.
That's what I told you this morning. No, wakey.
I was going to say, I usually have to say that to you halfway through a show.
Anaheim against Dallas, it's a 2-0 series lead. Getzlaf's been great. And the other game tonight, Columbus and Pittsburgh. Columbus wins its first ever Stanley Cup playoff game and go home with a 1-1 series standing.
And interesting, you look back at the stats, and we didn't get a chance to see a whole lot of that game, but Columbus outshoot them 40-39 in that game. You would have thought, okay, Bobrovsky has to stand on his head for them to get through this series. Malkin has got to come alive if Pittsburgh are going to have any chance. Obviously, the power play has got to be strong on them. Columbus, they've got a good thing going right now. Bobrovsky got through game one. He wasn't very good. Good in game two. There's a question mark with Fleury. There's a question mark with the defensive side of Pittsburgh. If Columbus keep trying wearing them down, taking the body to them. Columbus are in it. There's no doubt about it, and they're not an easy team to play against.
Well, and should we have not been talking about Sidney dominating in the first two games and not an 18-year-old named McKinnon? I mean, you look at now what they've been able to do against Crosby, and you're sitting there going, how far can they take this series? I mean, at some point, doesn't Malkin and Crosby take over here?
But it's embarrassing to the Pittsburgh Penguins that they're up 3-1 at home, and they let that one slip away. And I'm giving...
two-goal lead.
Right. You're giving Columbus all the credit in the world, and Columbus have played two hard games in there, and they blew a 3-1 lead. So both teams have blown 3-1 leads in game one and two. But for Pittsburgh to let that, with the psychic that's going on in Pittsburgh's head because of the last couple of years of playoffs, for them to blow that game, it might play in their heads a little bit. Tonight's just a monumental game. If Pittsburgh lose tonight, well, they're in big trouble.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. I mean, a situation where they overcome a lead and then let one slip away on home ice, and you got to think that their confidence is a little bit fragile, though maybe going on the road makes them feel a little bit better.
I chuckled because when Pittsburgh have played in Columbus the last few years, it's been 70% Pittsburgh people in the crowd. The playoff tickets went on sale. They allowed only Ohio people to buy the tickets first, and then they would release them to Pennsylvania people. Unfortunately, during my time there, there's a lot of Ohio people that are Pens fans because it borders on Pennsylvania.
We have an update on the status of Steve Mason from the Philadelphia Flyers. He will not be available to go for game number 3. I'm not sure he would have necessarily started anyway because of the way Ray Emery stepped up and rebounded in game 2 and that victory.
No, Mason said this morning that he's feeling better, making progress, but not there yet. And they bought themselves some time with Emery playing so well, and you figured they would have come back with Emery anyway. You don't change up a winning goaltender. So the scenario, you know, if as long as he's making progress, he could be ready for later in the series, and they don't have to worry about it for at least a game.
Okay, can you guys explain this situation right now that's sweeping across 7 of the 8 series where teams can't hold on to leads? I don't think we've ever seen it to this degree before.
Yeah, no. Parity? There's not a lot of difference between teams. Special teams can turn games on a dime depending on situations that way.
I don't know. Two goals isn't a lock in my opinion. I've never felt like I've been out of a game being down 2-0. So,
yeah, when you're in, like you said, it's the worst lead in hockey. When you're down 3-1 and you make it 3-2, it's like the mindset is, hey, we're right back at it. We're right back in it. But still, it's bizarre. We just haven't seen it for a long time. Is it the way they're calling the game has a little bit to do with it? I mean, there's more space. We've seen a ton of space in this game. How many times in the playoffs have we watched games say, there's absolutely no room out on that ice? We're watching games now. It looks like there's a ton of room out on the ice. I mean, I know there isn't, but...
But typically, you'd look at the stats during the season for all the teams, or the teams successful, and it would be leading after two periods. How many times would they have lost? Once in a season? That type of deal? Or how many blown leads?
The numbers when teams score first, it's always overwhelming that team has a great record.
But we're watching the defending Stanley Cup champions blow two of them. And Pittsburgh Penguins, who went deep last year until they met Boston. I mean, we're seeing good teams, blow it. That's the different thing. Not bad teams, good teams.
Go back to the last game of the playoffs a year ago. Chicago gives up a late goal. Now, they got one right back after that.
Right.
But it looked like that game was going to overtime. And then two late goals in this series.
Yeah, I mean, what a great opportunity they had that they frittered away. You know, what was the game one, a minute and a half or a minute 50 that they give up the tying goal? Then the power play goal, the Seabrook hit to the head that leads to the tying goal with half a dozen seconds left, and then both times overtime losses. And they put themselves in a tough situation in that now, even though they're going home and they'll feel good about being in their barn, St. Louis, I think, has got the swagger back themselves after struggling down the stretch, as you mentioned, Doug. And, you know, maybe Backus out of there takes a bit of that steam away. But Chicago, without Seabrook at the back end, having trouble protecting leads, there's going to be a fragility there.
Not really a goaltender-friendly season so far.
No.
And, you know, at times they've been difference makers, and now... You know, some of them are holding their teams in, but it's not like the league's, I'm sure, frustrated with all the goals that they're seeing.
No. I'm loving it. I mean, I think it's exciting. And like, usually you go into it and you say, okay, goaltending is going to be unbelievable, and it's going to, you know, that's why we've got such low-scoring games, because the goaltending is so good. I mean... Yeah. I mean,
and let's face it.
Think about 13 goals on Jonathan Quick in two games. It's mind-boggling.
And let's face it. Nobody ever pays to go see a goalie. Nobody.
Just the rec league.
You can have low-scoring games that are exciting if the goalie's standing on his head, as long as you're generating the scoring chances. But you mentioned about McKinnon. What about the story that's unfolding there with that team?
Who's been the best goalie in the playoffs?
Can you argue Carey?
Carey Price.
After his first 16 shots.
Yeah. Carey Price, Varlamov.
Niemi's been good.
You know, Niemi's been good.
Yeah. Hockey Central from the Stanley Cup playoffs here in Montreal, where the Canadiens hold a 3-0 series lead. Hockey Central presented by Lexus on the Park. You're going to get yelled at for throwing that mic around.
Oh, I thought I was supposed to keep it down.
I thought I was supposed to keep it down when I'm not talking.
Should we bring up the visit in Tampa?
Darren Millard, Nick Kiprios, Doug McLean, and Scott Morrison. The Stanley Cup playoffs are a time when pressure obviously mounts, but Nathan McKinnon, what this young man has done, it's shocking to me that he was playing junior hockey a year ago with the way he's performing right now.
What's shocking to me is an 18-year-old that can be that explosive, that strong. At times we've seen great first-round picks overall, and you could see the raw talent, but what you don't see is yet the ability to go from being, you know, a young man or a teenager to a man. And it's as if he's already arrived. And we saw it a little bit at the Memorial Cup where that the difference between him and everybody else was that explosiveness, that power, that man.
But going
strength.
Into that tournament, there was a debate, you know, about who was going to be number one.
No, there was not. Not in our eyes.
But here's what, he's got a little of Sidney Crosby in him, that lower body strength that he has. And I only saw him play two games in junior a year ago in Charlottetown. And I'm thinking, wow, can this guy skate? And the power he skates with. And the goal he scored the other night, the first goal, where he cut across the blue line and goes top shelf with it. Lateral movement.
To the outside.
Power in his lower body. And I think what's catching me off guard is scoring one. But he's making great plays in tough areas, below the goal line, on the wall. He's making big plays.
Well, in that line, I mean, you think about the performance of a Paul Stastny as well. Here's a guy people wondered, were they going to move him at the trade deadline? Would have got, a pick maybe for him? Maybe a player, I don't know. But they hung tough, risking that they may lose him in the offseason. Landeskog stepped up there too, the threesome. 7 goals, 10 assists in those first two games. I mean, it's just an awesome performance.
And no Duchesne. I mean, 2-0, and many would have thought going in, hey, you know, Duchesne, team speed will drop off a touch, but they're still a fast team. But Duchesne is a big loss when you think about it.
And the Avs are hoping that he's going to skate today for the first time, but still a ways away from returning.
Non-playoff news, so Rick Olchek is out as assistant general manager with the Edmonton Oilers, and Anton Belov says that he's going back to the KHL because he didn't want to play for that coach being Dallas Eakins. Not a great day for the Oilers. And they're not even in the Stanley Cup playoffs.
I blame the Oilers for this. The Oilers should have been ahead of this. Belov, you're not coming back because we don't want you. Well, and been ahead of it and get him out of town.
You know, and the thing is, too, is like the way he feels about his coach isn't any different from us when we played 15, 20 years ago or the guys in the 40s or 50s. We just didn't say it. With all due respect,
just a minute.
We did not say it.
Just a minute.
Yeah, I didn't like playing for you. You know what I mean? It's like, take the high road. Just say, you know,
just
what,
keep your
you're
mouth
moving
shut.
On. You don't have to throw Dallas under the bus like that. To me, that's a private matter.
I
don't
like
want to hear that. I didn't like that.
But
it's a great soundbite for us.
I would, you know, I would have not been able to bite my tongue. I would have had a comment for Anton. Is it Anton? That's how bad he is. I didn't even learn his first name.
We are hearing those types of quotes more and more. Clark MacArthur didn't like playing for Randy Carlyle. Guys didn't like playing for Ron Wilson. And they're voicing their opinions about things.
Goalie in Quebec didn't like playing for Patrick Roy.
In all honesty, I think it goes to show you the new challenges for these head coaches. Mm-hmm. And that it is different here. And it includes the browbeating. It was so much more common, you know, in years past. You can't do that anymore. For whatever reason, you run the risk of having guys like that come out and, you know, throw you under the bus.
Are you telling me you can't make players cry anymore?
You can't make them cry anymore. You can't have them dress for practice in the boiler room.
Come on.
You can't threaten to, you know, trade their brother if they don't improve.
What was the old line? I'll send you so far down, the hockey news won't even be able to find you.
You mentioned the goalie for the Quebec Ramparts, and this is a couple of years ago where Halifax came back from a 3-0 series deficit and won 4 straight, and Patrick Hall was asked about it the other day, and he said, what was the reason for losing the series? He said, and he was given a couple of options, and one of them, he just came up on his own and says, can I say bad goaltending? Well, that goaltender, Louis Dominique, who's now part of the Phoenix Coyote organization, caught wind of this and fired back on Twitter. And he just said, congratulations to Patrick Roy one more time. What a class act. I'm capable of accepting blame when the hat fits. But to denigrate and attack me publicly for 3 years, in addition to intimidating and humiliating, I'm ending my silence. Patrick Roy intimidated me verbally day after day, never came to help me, by far and away one of the worst people I've ever met.
So Dallas should feel pretty good then.
He says he respects Patrick Roy, the goalie, but that's as vicious of a response. And he also says he never would have said anything had Patrick not come out and blamed the goaltending for that Quebec League series.
Well, and it sounded like Patrick was being just a little bit sarcastic about it, or just having a little glib about it, maybe a better way of putting it. I'm not sure that he named the kid by name to throw him under the bus, but there's the big difference, too, is that once upon a time, an enterprising reporter would have had to go down and find the kid to say, what do you think of this? And no guarantees it happens. Now, he hears about it, and it's all over Twitter to start with, and then he can get out and reply to it. So social media has made a big difference about players and coaches alike being a lot more outspoken.
Anybody, somebody listening in their car or watching us right now, everybody's got issues with somebody's down the road. Mm-hmm. And, you know, how you choose to handle it or what you want to say publicly or keep private, you got to make smart decisions. Again, I don't necessarily agree with this. You know, I'm going to look at the way you interrupted me earlier in the show.
But look,
right?
But look at this.
Relax.
It's like,
smile, would
it's, you? It's, I go to, I go to City TV this morning and you tweet out that because we're going on and following us is people talking about gardening tips, you say, I'm going just because I want the gardening tips. Well, now I've got 100 people sending me notes on gardening. I mean, I don't need that aggravation, you know?
It's just, you know, I don't know. I mean, does that make him feel better about himself? You know, I don't know.
I don't like seeing catfights.
I think it's just too much. I think it's too much dirty laundry in social media.
I didn't like Beloff's comments. And you know what? And Patrick, hey, if you're going to throw a kid under the bus, then you got to be prepared. It's like, it's the same thing we saw with Brodeur and the guy
Sean Avery.
Sean Avery. I mean, if you're going to make comments, you have to be able to take it back.
I mean, if I'm the Quebec League, I'm knocking on some doors and asking around to see exactly what happened there.
Well, in this day and age, there's always
concern. In all honesty, we weren't there. We don't know what was said, how it was said, what was done. You want to research all of that? You want to get to the truth of their, you know, little, you know, tiff? I don't. I mean, deal with it yourself. Yeah. I got other things to worry about.
So, 3-0 series lead here for the Montreal Canadiens. Does this series go back to Tampa Bay?
I think it has the potential to. I mean, there's not a lot about anything about the Canadiens game, really, that you don't like right now, from the goaltender right through to, you mentioned about the three lines contributing. You know, the power play looks like it's close to being there. There's not anything to dislike about their game. But Tampa also came on and I thought showed a lot of poise last night to bounce back in that game after the onslaught at the start.
The only way it can go back to Tampa Bay is if Tampa Bay win.
Would you agree? Would you agree?
That was deep.
Guys, like, you've covered a lot of games in Montreal over the years. That energy before the game, their presentation to get the crowd going was phenomenal.
We look forward to it again tomorrow.
Unbelievable.
So long from Montreal.